Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. In past episodes, I've talked about the gods, or some of the gods, in the universe of Conan the Barbarian. And in this episode, I'd like to talk exclusively about the gods, just to round them all up and address them as, well, I wouldn't call it a pantheon, but as a group. So I want to just cover all of the different gods that we hear about, or that are even suggested in the universe of Conan the Barbarian. Before diving into that, though, we should probably really quickly address the question of whether there are gods in the universe of Conan the Barbarian. Unlike some fantasy worlds where you get the sense that there's definitive proof that a god exists, or a collection of gods exists, in the sense that they come down among humans and dwell among them, or humans are able to travel up to Mount Olympus-style physical temple and speak with the gods directly and meet them and shake their hands. There is no such evidence in Conan the Barbarian. He himself is not a titan or a demigod. He never meets the god. It's very similar to the real world, where there is a sense among many people that there are gods, but not really any tangible proof. So, are there gods in the Conan universe? I think you could argue either way. You could say, yes, there are absolutely gods because of these certain events that Robert E. Howard, the author of the original Conan stories, which are the only stories that I take into account, proving, you know, relaying to the reader, yes, there are gods. Or you could just say, well, that's what people would say if they saw this event happen. They would say, that's proof of a god, but they're wrong. So you could go either way. Now, whether you would want to go either way on that if you're doing an RPG or a tabletop game where certain powers or features of the game rely on there actually being gods, that would be a different story. Then you would probably want the gods to be definitively real, or not. It's all up to you and how you flavor that. But there are a couple of events, a couple of magical things that happen in the Conan stories, and I'll try to touch on them as we go through the different gods, that suggest strongly that the gods are real in the Conan universe. Again, depends on how you interpret it, though. Could just be coincidence. And we may as well start with Conan's very own Crom. This one's a familiar name because if you read Conan the Barbarian, I think even in the expanded universe, a very frequent curse that he uses is by Crom. So Crom is his god. We don't know a whole lot about Crom, except that he's kind of an isolationist god. Conan says to his lover, in the Queen of the Black Coast, quote, "He dwells on a great mountain. What use to call on him? Little he cares if men live or die. Better to be silent than to call his attention to you. He will send you doom, not fortune. He is grim and loveless, but at birth he breathes power to strive and slay into a man's soul. What else shall men ask of the god?" End quote. So that's Crom really in a nutshell for you. There's not a whole lot more to say about him, to be honest, other than he is a very clearly a harsh god, and apparently gives humans the strength to conquer others or to fight for themselves, maybe, and that's what Crom does. And if you call his attention upon you, you're just as likely to be punished for bothering him as you are to be blessed with some kind of assistance. Thinking about this in terms of D&D, I think for alignment, I would lean towards chaotic evil for Crom, and I'll tell you why I'm not going neutral evil for him. Because neutral evil, I always feel, because the neutral part, sort of, I think of you, of there being a temple, maybe, and people go to the temple, and whether the person coming to this temple is good or evil, then they receive evil in return. And that's all they get. That's neutral evil to me. It's kind of the inverse of neutral good, where you have a temple and anyone who comes to you gets a blessing or gets healing or whatever. Because even if they're evil themselves, you will heal them. That's neutrality. That's good, neutral. Neutral evil, the inverse, right? So Crom, I don't feel, is neutral evil. I feel like sometimes he'll surprise you and give you a blessing. Other times he surprises you and curses you. So I'm thinking that's chaotic. That's chaos, chaotic evil, really. So that's kind of why I think I would lean towards chaotic evil. And to support that, maybe, is the fact that Conan himself sometimes curses as with the phrase, or sometimes, I should say, I think once, but he says the phrase, Crom and his devils, as if the Crom has a collection of devils that he keeps on hand. So I don't think that Crom is a good god, in other words, and Conan certainly doesn't appear to have any kind of love for him at all. In fact, there's some kind of, you do definitely detect a little bit of antagonism. Now, interestingly, the region that Conan is from, where he was born and grew up, is the north of his world, and the north of his world, like Earth, is associated with cold and harshness. It is referenced in Queen of the Black Coast that there is a Nordheimer's Valhalla, strongly suggesting, obviously, that there's a little bit of Viking culture up in the north. It's not really ever addressed again, although there are some northern terms thrown around here and there in terms of social structure or in terms of just proper names and things like that. But generally, we don't get the sense that Conan is a Viking, but maybe he's a little bit Viking. Maybe he's a little bit Barbarian Viking. Maybe those two things in this world are kind of equivalent, but the term Valhalla is definitely applied to something in the north, the Nordheimer's Valhalla, and it is spoken by Conan, so it is a reference from Conan himself. What that means, I don't know, because there's no suggestion otherwise that there's any amount of Norse mythology influence in the pantheon of the north. So I just wanted to mention that was mentioned, but I'm throwing it out because it doesn't seem to have any kind of application. Okay, so the next god is Asura. This is mentioned by Conan as he swears by Asura in a book called The Scarlet Citadel. I'm not sure if Asura is a god or a goddess, but this Asura is referred to as the deity of Vindhya in the book, or in the story, People of the Black Circle. Asura's religion is based on mysticism and astrology. The priests of Asura guard the royal family, the local royal family in Vindhya, by reducing all waste products, hair trimmings, nail trimmings, etc., to ash, prevent them from being used as magical channels in spells against the royal family. You might want to say that they're very superstitious from that, but there's proof in the book, or at least insofar as we accept what is in the book as real, there's proof in the book that it can happen, that this sort of almost voodoo-like magic exists and can be used against people in this realm. So Asura's priests, being very careful with parts of the royal family, the discarded part, is actually very smart of them. Asura's cults seek, quote, below the aspect of illusion. So they are able to see past illusion. Followers of Asura also excel at gathering intelligence, and they have secret channels of knowledge throughout the land. Some people say that the cult of Asura is a vestigial branch of Seth worship, which of course started in Stygia, but in fact the followers of Asura, according to themselves, came from Vindhya, beyond the Sea of Vilayet and the Blue Himalayan Mountains. They are sons of the East, they call themselves, not the South, and they have knowledge of all the wizards of the East, who are greater than the wizards of the West, according to, again, sort of the Asuran priests and temple authorities. There is a temple of Asura in Tarantia, Tarantia, which is led by a priest named Hadrathus. They're loyal to Conan because he protected them when Mitra's missionaries scoured the land. And you'll hear more about Mitra. I've mentioned Mitra in a previous episode, but you'll hear a little bit more about Mitra in this episode as well. The Temple of Asura, located in Tarantia, is described a little bit in the story Hour of the Dragon, and this is the temple, again, that is led by Hadrathus. The chamber was a large one, with marble walls partly covered with black velvet hangings and thick, rich carpets on the mosaic floor, laved in the soft golden glow of bronze lamplight. Asura, the Asuran religion, the religion of Asura, is fairly well misunderstood, as I think most of the people of Vindhya believe they themselves are. And because of this misunderstanding, combined with the fact that, at least in Conan's lifespan, the worship of Mitra is growing like wildfire, and the worship that the Church of Mitra encourages, really monotheism, that Mitra should be your only master, and So many of the rulers of the time are putting official bans on local religions in favor of the religion of Mitra. So Asura, there's a ban against worshipping Asura, and as a result, the temples of Asura are hidden quite well within the cities. You could walk right past one and not even realize you were out in the front of an Asuran temple. Now, combined with that general superstition about Asura, there are dark tales of hidden temples where intense smoke drifts up incessantly from black altars, where kidnapped humans are sacrificed before a great coiled serpent, whose fearsome head sways forever in the haunted shadow. Of course, I mean, just hearing that sort of description of what might be going on in Asuran temples, it rings very much true for a temple of Set, but not so much for Asura, possibly. Not that I've ever been in a temple of Asura, but it does sound like the locals probably are confusing one with the other. And then again, maybe not. Maybe the legends are true. Maybe Asura is an offshoot of Set worship from Stygia, and it's evil and should be avoided. We really don't know. If we judge a religion by its followers, then I never got the sense, from the brief time I was able to spend with the Asurans, in one book, really, I never really got the sense that they were evil inclined in any way. I don't agree with the assertion that Asura descended from Set worship. Or maybe if it did, then I would say that it's an offshoot in the direction of not evil, of something else. So in terms of alignment, I'd kind of go maybe just neutral good for Asura. It's really hard to pinpoint because we don't get to know Asura very well. But again, the followers themselves seem... I guess neutral good is what I would actually go with now that I'm saying it out loud. I was kind of struggling between neutral and neutral good, but I think true neutral good. But I think neutral good would probably be the way that I would lean on this, because it seems that at least Asura's followers are... They seem to be good people, as far as I can tell, and they seem to sort of keep an eye out for their own, and where their own isn't necessarily their own, I think would be the neutral part, because they adopt Conan in simply because he defended them. So I feel it's a neutral good feel from Asura. I wouldn't want to go too far into the good, I don't think, because there is that reputation of maybe there being something that we're not all told about Asura. Maybe there's something a little bit deeper that maybe we just don't know yet. Next up is a god named Thaug, or maybe Taug, T-H-A-G. Thaug is not mentioned often. It is not clear whether Thaug is a male or a female god. All that is said of Thaug is that Thaug loves dresses made of human skin, human sacrifice, scrying. I don't think that exact term is used in the Conan stories, but Thaug loves to spy on others. We do get the sense that Thaug is an elder god introduced to Coran by Salome the Witch. That's really all we know about Thaug. So in terms of alignment for Thaug, I would have to go with neutral evil, or maybe even lawful evil. It's difficult to know since, again, we know essentially one sentence about Thaug. But Thaug likes human skin clothing and human sacrifice and spying on people. It seems rather evil to me. And again, it could be lawful evil, it could be neutral evil, but I think it's all about the on that one. And certainly Salome the Witch was not, again, if we're judging religions by their followers, then Salome the Witch definitely did not suggest anything but evil. Granted, she's misunderstood, but I do feel like she lashed out a lot more than maybe necessary. It's your call. Check out A Witch Shall Be Born for more information on that. I'll mention a couple of lesser gods now, since we're on Thaug, I might as well continue with the easy ones. So there's Ymir, Y-M-I-R. All we know from this is that Conan swears by Ymir. Ymir, for all I know, isn't even a god. It could be the name of Conan's mom. But I'm assuming that Conan likes to swear by the gods, or by devils, and so Ymir, I'm assuming, is some kind of divinity. That's in Hour of the Dragon. There's also Yun, Y-N. This is a chitin god, or a kitten god, chitin. K-H-I-T-A-N, or goddess, I'm not sure. And again, we don't know anything about Yun. There's also Anu, a god or a goddess, probably a small local god from what I could gather. But again, no real information aside from the name. Here's one that I have a little bit more information on. Jebal Sar. That's J-H-E-B-B-A-L space S-A-R. Jebal Sar. Jebal Sar is a Pictish god, and you may remember the Picts from previous Conan episodes as a kind of savage people, sort of to the southwest-ish of sort of the center of civilization. The Picts, if you listen to the Hyborian Age or read the Hyborian Age essay by Robert E. Howard, you'll discover that the Picts actually at one time were considered the civilization. They were the civilized people of the world, but then a great cataclysm and the Picts, and along with the other civilizations around them, kind of fell from grace in a really big way and never quite recovered. So Jebal Sar is a Pictish god. Once, supposedly, all living things worshipped Jebal Sar, but that was a long time ago when beasts and men spoke one language. Men have forgotten him, even the beasts have forgotten. Only a few remember. The men who remember Jebal Sar and the beasts who remember are brothers and speak the same tongue. Now, in D&D lingo, of course, that would mean that a cleric of Jebal Sar would inherit the ability to talk to beasts, maybe command beasts, things like that. And in fact, in one of the original Conan stories, I don't remember which one, it is stated that Jogar Sag can command prehistoric beasts. Now, Jebal Sar had some number of children, it's not really explained how many, but one of Jebal Sar's children is named Gula, G-U-L-L-A-H. Gula is kept chained to an altar. He is a bull ape, and the Picts believe that they're sacred to the, quote, hairy one who lives on the moon, that is, the gorilla god of Gula. That's about all I know about the Jebal Sar and the Gula family. Point being, it is that they're sort of savage gods, old gods that belong to the Picts. Apparently one of them lives on the moon, maybe possibly chained to an altar on the moon. Not really clear on that, but they're very animalistic, both from what I understand, in form and in attitude. Really kind of similar to Crom in a way. And probably about the equal, an equal age, I would imagine. Although maybe Crom doesn't predate the Cataclysm, I'm not really sure. But you do get the sense that that kind of harsh, the fittest will survive kind of attitude is shared among a couple of different gods. Whereas there are other gods, like Asura, probably, and Mitra and Set, who presumably have kind of their own agenda. I don't feel like Crom or Jebal Sar have that much meaning. It's much more like they're just powers, and they exist. And if you want to worship them, you can, but it's better just not to evoke their wrath. Similar, maybe, in spirit to Jebal Sar and Gula is Hanuman, the Accursed. Hanuman is an evil ape god worshipped by Tatrasmek, a wizard priest in a land called Zambula. He is bestial in the uncertain light. Hanuman leers with his carven mask. He sits not as an ape would crouch, but cross-legged as a man would sit. But his aspect is no less simian for that reason. He is carved from black marble, but his eyes are rubies, which glow red and lustful as the coals of hell's deepest pit. His great hands lay upon his lap, palms upward, taloned fingers spread and grasping. In the gross emphasis of his attributes, in the leer of his satyr countenance, is reflected the abominable cynicism of the degenerate cult which deified him. That's all I know about Hanuman the Accursed. Clearly not a happy god. Probably a fairly early god, maybe something that sprang up near the cataclysm, really on either side of the cataclysm. Maybe he's so old that survival of the fittest was the way of the land, and so that's what their gods reflected. Or maybe post-cataclysm, and he kind of got developed or deified in the struggle for that humanity was experiencing to kind of get back on their feet and figure out how to survive in a world that had drastically changed. I mean, continents had shifted, islands had disappeared, that kind of thing. Another god popular in Zambula is Erlik, E-R-L-I-K. Don't really know anything about Erlik, except that he is a god of the Turanians. And you'll remember the Turanians being the inhabitants of the kingdom of Turan. I think he's probably a fairly local god, because you don't hear a whole lot about him. You also hear about Tarim, T-A-R-I-M, who is considered the god of Turan, including Khawarizm, Peshkari, and others. So Tarim seems to be an important god in Turin, and Erlik really doesn't get mentioned much at all. To be fair, the native Turin gods don't really get that much screen time, so I don't know if it's because the gods aren't that important in that region, or whether they just weren't important in the stories that we happened to be spending in Turin. Starting to run out of gods at this point, we're down to just the last couple, so I'm going to do an honorable mention before we get into some of the more major gods on which I have a little bit more material, and that is for Yag-Kosha. Yag-Kosha, that's Yag-Kosha, is possibly a non-terrestrial deity. Might not be a god of Earth, but then again, possibly not a deity at all. It's not super clear when Yag-Kosha is invoked, when his name or its name is invoked. It's not super clear whether it's the name of a god, or again, it could just be a relative that someone is crying out to. But I got this in personally that it's a god from another world. You can read the Tower of Elephant of the Elephant to draw your own conclusions about whether or not Yag-Kosha is a god, whether Yag-Kosha is a prehistoric god or a distant god. You can figure that out on your own, but all I'll say is that there's an entity somewhere, or there was an entity somewhere called Yag-Kosha. Could be a deity, could be a wizard, could be, again, someone's mother. I'm not really sure. Okay, so the major gods, I guess, in Conan are really, I would say, Mitra and Set. Not necessarily because either of them get a whole lot of actual screen time, as it were, but they are pervasive. They are often mentioned, they are referred to, they are hinted at, they're ever present. There's another one, though, that I should get to first, and this god is called Khosatral Khel. That's Khosatral space Khel. It's significant to call to talk about Khosatral Khel because it is very much implied that Khosatral Khel is a very, very old god, an elder god, just an ancient power and force from which probably many things evolve. It has been suggested by readers that Khosatral Khel is really almost Lovecraftian, and since Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard and Lord Dunsany were all active at pretty much the same time, they were all writing at the same time, so they've influenced each other quite a lot, and I think Khosatral Khel is the one where that really, really comes through, maybe? Well, Khosatral Khel and Set, I think, are the two that comes through really strongly, that kind of Lovecraftian sense. Although you could argue that Set and Nyarlathotep are both really just Egyptian-influenced anyway. Khosatral Khel, though, is, quote, "the transmutation of the being men called Khosatral Khel, which crawled up from night and the abyss ages ago to clothe itself in the substance of the material universe. But human flesh was too frail, too paltry, to hold the terrific essence that was Khosatral Khel. So he stood up in the shape and aspect of a man, but his flesh was not flesh, nor the bone bone, nor blood blood. He became a blasphemy against all nature, for he caused to live and think and act a basic substance that before had never known the pulse and stir of animate being. He stalked through the world as a god, for no earthly weapon could harm him, and to him a century was like an hour. In his wanderings he came upon a primitive people inhabiting the island of Dagonia, and it pleased him to give this race culture and civilization, and by his aid they built the city of Dagon, and they abode there and worshipped him. Strange and grisly were his servants, called from the dark corners of the planet where grim survivals of forgotten ages yet lurked. His house in Dagon was connected with every other house by tunnels through which his shaven-headed priests bore victims for their sacrifice. But after many ages a fierce and brutish people appeared on the shores of the sea. They called themselves Yuetshi, and after a fierce battle were defeated and enslaved, and for nearly a generation they died on the altars of Khosatral. His sorcery kept them in bond. Then their priest, a strange, gaunt man of unknown race, plunged into the wilderness, and when he returned he bore a knife that was no earthly substance. It was forged of a meteor, which flashed through the sky like a flaming arrow, and fell in a far valley. The slaves rose, their saw-edged crescents cut down the men of Dagon like sheep, and against that unearthly knife the magic of Khosatral was impotent, while carnage and slaughter bellowed through the red smoke that choked the streets. The grimmest act of that grim drama was played in the cryptic dome behind the great daist chamber, with its copper throne and its walls mottled like the skin of serpent. From that dome, the Yuetshi priest emerged alone. He had left Khosatral lying upon the golden dais with the mystic knife across his breast for a spell to hold him senseless and inanimate until doomsday. But the ages passed, and the priest died. The towers of deserted Dagon crumbled. The tales became dim, and the Yuetshi were reduced by plagues and famine and war to scattered remnant, dwelling in squalor along the seashore. Only the cryptic dome resisted the rot of time, until a chance thunderbolt and the curiosity of a fisherman lifted from the breast of the god the magic knife and broke the spell. Khosatral Khel rose and lived and waxed mighty once more. It pleased him to restore the city as it was in the days before its fall. By his necromancy he lifted the towers from the dust of forgotten millennia, and the folk, which had been dust for ages, move in life again. So that's a quote mostly from the Iron, or the God in Irons, the story name from Conan the Barbarian. So Khosatral Khel is a major figure in one story, and he's a great one to cover, I think, because he's got such a rich backstory, and the society that he raises after he himself is raised again is, they are active at night, but they go into a slumber, a trance or whatever, during the day, and then they come back to life at night. So it's an interesting sort of, that could be an interesting kind of town for a adventuring party to encounter. Or likewise, Khosatral Khel before being resurrected would be an interesting temptation for them in a dungeon. Be a magical sword on across the chest of Khosatral Khel. Wouldn't it be nice to take that sword? I don't know if your players would fall for that. I feel like it is simultaneously a really, really minor, almost just for decoration thing that you would have in a dungeon. Like any old dungeon, you could put Khosatral Khel in the dungeon just as a potential boss, and all it would be, and smart players, of course, would walk right by that body, perfectly preserved body, or maybe it's not perfectly preserved. I guess it's up to you. And never would touch it, would never loot it. It would just be super obvious to some people, and then to others, of course, be something that they just couldn't resist. But I like the story, and I think it's a great example of one of those elements in Conan that we as modern readers and movie watchers and D&D players take for granted. We just think that it's something that is a modern story that's just kind of always been there, and then you read something like this and you think, oh, that's where this started. That's the source for this trope. I almost forgot to mention a fairly important, or a significant one, I should say, and that is this goddess called Ishtar. Ishtar is a goddess of Koth and some other southern regions. Ishtar is sworn upon by Strabonus, who is the king of Koth in the Scarlet Citadel, and the religion itself is described as part of the, quote, sensual, luxurious, yet despotic habits of Ishtar. Now, Ishtar is kind of significant because, and that's So what I've just described, sensual, luxurious, and yet despotic habits of the East, that's pretty much all we know about Ishtar, except this bit here, where Yasmila, a princess, I think, in one of the Conan stories, is kind of defecting, for lack of a better term, to Mitra worship. And as she approaches this new god, Mitra, she assumes she should do so naked on her knees, as befits a supplicant, lest Mitra deem that she lacks humility. And before she can, so it's assumed that this is what she would be used to from her native religion, which is that of Ishtar. That's what we know about Ishtar. I think in tradition, like if you look at Earth religions with a god or goddess named Ishtar, there is one out there where Ishtar is a female goddess of fertility and things like that. So I think a lot of readers kind of get that mixed up with what Ishtar must be in the Conan universe. There's nothing stating that's true or untrue. But what I have just told you have on Ishtar. The next god that we could talk about, I guess, is Set. And Set is the serpent god, widely worshipped in Stygia. I believe he's not really supposed to be worshipped in Stygia, but the Stygians hold on to him nevertheless. So there's a lot of superstition around Set, there is a lot of fear around Set, and it's widely believed that Set worship is a bad idea. But again, the cult of Set remains, and from depending on who you listen to, it's widespread in Stygia, or that's just a rumor, and people are just holding on to Stygia as a kind of a rampant Set worship land that you should stay out of. So we're not really sure the truth, but we do know that really, really bad sorcerers like Thoth Amon worship and gain power from Set. So he is definitely an evil god, someone to be feared and to stay away from. Set is either one of the Nameless Old Ones, or he may be in some way related to the Elder Gods. We're not really sure, but his Ring of Power, the thing that gives lots of evil power to any sorcerer who possesses it, does predate mankind, at the very least. So Set is definitely a very, very old god. He is sometimes said to be an archdemon rather than a god, and generally it can be safely said that Set's influence is still felt in the world of Conan the Barbarian. Even if Set the god has lost power, or has lost worshippers, or again, maybe Set has not. Stygia is still his home and his strength, but either way, influence widespread. Set is very much a presence in the world of Conan, whether people want him to be or not. I think Set would probably fall into the lawful evil realm. That's a little bit of a difficult call because there's precedence. You know, Set is obviously the Egyptian, is based on the Egyptian god Set or Seth. And in the D&D Appendix B, I think it is, Seth is described as a chaotic evil god, I think. Yeah, chaotic evil. In Egyptian mythology, Seth is generally is the chaotic god, and sort of known as a trickster, maybe. So there's a strong association with the name Set go for chaotic, but nothing about Set and his worshippers in the Conan books, in the Conan stories, says chaos to me. It actually says a lot about structure and hierarchy. There's Set, who is the source of evil. Set provides you with artifact and special items or blessings to help you serve Set, to spread evil. But it feels regimented. It does not feel chaotic. So I'm going to go with lawful evil for the Conan version of Set. Last and certainly not least, but also most recent, I feel, is Mitra. Mitra. Mitra is a hugely popular god by the time Conan the Barbarian is in the world. When Conan's walking around, Mitra has been injected into really most of the civilized world and is spreading still, to the point that worshipping other gods in some region, like the Asura, like the cult of Asura, it has been banned. So local rulers adopt Mitra as their religion and start to forbid local god or regional god in favor of Mitra. Now that said, there's the official decree, and then there's what the people actually do. And certainly, again, using Asura as an example, you can tell people they're not allowed to worship Mitra, or rather Asura, and that they have to worship Mitra, and they may go through the motions, they may not go through the motion, but they might still also have their hidden temples, or even if they're there, it might just be an altar in their own home to their own local god, or their own the god that they prefer. Mitra, I think thematically, if you like, is the march of civilization. Really, that's kind of the representation of what Mitra's religion is, if you want to abstract it away from religion. Not that that's a necessary to do, but I feel like that's what that really represents, and certainly Conan speaks about it in that way as well sometimes, especially when, for instance, the priests of Asura come to him and thank him for defending them against the missionary work of the priests of Mitra. Conan implies that he's not really interested in the ways of quote-unquote civilization, and that he feels that a lot of what civilization brings isn't really all that great in the end. But in fact, that has traditionally been the entry point for Mitra into places where Mitra might otherwise not have been accepted.
For instance, a famous story is told in The Hyperborean Age by Robert E. Howard, which you can listen to the whole thing. I might repost it. I still may repost it on this feed, but it is available over at LibriVox.org, read by me. So hear that. It's a pretty long read, a little bit dry, but it exists. But I'm gonna take a little snippet out of the same text for a demonstration of how Mitra was spread. So it says, "But the Picts were growing amazingly in population and power. By a strange twist of fate, it was largely due to the efforts of one man, and he an alien, that they set their feet upon the ways that led to eventual empire. This man was Arus, a Numidian priest, a natural-born reformer. What turned his mind toward the Picts is not certain, but this much is history. He determined to go into the western wilderness and modify the rude ways of the heathen by the introduction of the gentle worship of Mitra. He was not daunted by the grisly tales of what had happened to traders and explorers before him, and by some whim of fate he came among the people he sought, alone and unarmed, and was not instantly speared. He pointed out the power and splendor of the Hyborian kingdoms as an example of the power of Mitra, whose teachings and works had lifted them up to their high places. And he spoke of cities and fertile plains, marble walls and iron chariots, jeweled towers and horsemen in their glittering armor riding to battle. And Gorm, that's the Pictish chieftain who Arus was talking with the unerring instinct of the barbarian, passed over his words regarding gods and their teachings and fixed on the material powers thus vividly described. As has been said, Arus was a practical man. He dwelt among the Picts and found much that an intelligent man could do to aid humanity. Like all priests of Mitra, he was instructed in many things. He found that there were vast deposits of iron ore in the Pictish hills, and he taught the natives to mine, smelt, and work it into implement, agricultural implement, as he fondly believed. He instituted other reforms, but these were the most important things he did. He instilled in Gorm a desire to see the civilized lands of the world. He taught the Picts how to work in iron, and he established contact between them and the civilized world. At the chief's request, he conducted him and some of his warriors through the Bossonian marches, where the honest villagers stared in amazement into the glittering outer world. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of how the missionaries of Mitra, some of their methodologies. And I do get the sense that there is an argument there that Mitra considers itself more civilized than any of the existing local gods. And Mitra, I guess, has a sense that it's a new god. Of course, the writing in Conan never goes so far as to actually give insight as to what's happening in the metaphysics of the world, of its pantheon, so we really have no idea whether Mitra is an old god, a new god, whatever. But certainly the religion of Mitra seems to be new in the world of Conan, and by that same kind of sense, I get the feeling that probably Mitra as a god as a god who exists in this universe is kind of newish. The cult of Mitra, or the religion of Mitra, value, as far as we can tell, simplicity, and I think maybe low protocol, doesn't really demand a whole lot from people. As I said, compared to Ishtar, Mitra's demands appeared to be pretty surprisingly simple to Yasmila. The benefits that Mitra promises actually do appear to be delivered upon in a couple of different times in the Conan stories. So in the Black Colossus, an avatar of Mitra actually appears to someone, to Yasmila of Coraja, and helps her in her hour of need. So she gets a very real representation of Mitra's presence and involvement. This is what the temple of Mitra looked like in the Black Colossus. The ceiling was lofty, but it was not domed, and was of plain white marble, as were the walls and floor, the former with a narrow gold frias running around them. Behind an altar of clear green jade, unstained with sacrifice, stood the pedestal whereon sat the material manifestation of the deity. Yasmila looked in awe at the sweep of the magnificent shoulders, the clear-cut features, the wide, straight eyes, the patriarchal beard, the thick curls of the hair, confined by a simple band about the temple. This is but the emblem of the god. None pretends to know what Mitra looks like. This but represents him in idealized human form, as near perfection as the human mind can conceive. He does not inhabit this cold stone, as your priests tell you Ishtar does. He is everywhere, above us and about us, and he dreams betimes in the high places among the stars. But here his being focuses. Therefore call upon him. That's what Yasmila's handmaiden told her about Mitra. So on the surface, at least, if we take Mitra at his word, Mitra's a pretty good god. I think if you were aligning him within D&D, he would definitely go lawful good, or maybe neutral good. He does, as far as we can tell, seem very, very full of good intentions. He seems to help people when asked. There's no indication that there's any kind of surprise debt that you'll have to pay later. He doesn't twist the words of your prayers or anything like that. That being said, there are those, the priests of Asura being among them, possibly the culture around Ishtar being among them, because I definitely got some hesitancy from Yasmila when she was, again, quote-unquote, defecting to Mitra. Conan certainly doesn't necessarily trust them. So there's something there, and this is maybe I'm reaching here, but in Phoenix on the Sword, there's a passage that suggests that there is something behind all of the simplicity and transparency that's maybe not so simple and not so transparent. Only the inner circle of the priestcraft know of the black stone corridor carved in the black heart of Mount Golamira by unknown hands, or of the phoenix-guarded tomb where Epimetrius was lay to rest 1,500 years ago. And since that time, no living man has entered it. For his chosen priests, after placing the sage in the crypt, blocked up the outer entrance of the corridor so that no man could find it, and today not even the high priests know where it is, only by word of mouth, handed down by the high priests to the chosen few, and jealously guarded, does the inner circle of Mitra's acolytes know of the resting place of Epimetrius in the black heart of Golamira. It is one of the mysteries on which Mitra's cult stands. So that doesn't certainly condemn Mitra. In fact, Epimetrius is a benevolent spirit. He was a sage, dead for 1,500 years, as the passage says, by the time Conan is around, and his body lies in this crypt, in this tomb, and it is said that he sends forth his ghost on unseen wings to aid Aquilonia in times of need. So it's not a problem, and in fact, Epimetrius fought Set back when Set was coiling like a python around the world, and so it's not really a problem. And in fact, one of the benefits of having Epimetrius around is that his symbol is a phoenix, and if it is inscribed in as a rune on a weapon or an artifact or whatever, then it grows in power. So all of these things are good. You just kind of have to wonder why it has to be a secret if Mitra is so good and transparent. Could be completely innocent. I'm just taking note that there are things that we don't necessarily that aren't upfront and aren't fully transparent in the religion of Mitra. And that's pretty much all of the gods that I have to talk about. I mean, you know, if you've heard the past episodes in this little mini series, that there are other gods made mention of. There's Dagon and Derketo, for instance, which again, I don't even know if they're actual gods. They could be places. Certainly Dagon is, so maybe Derketo is as well. I'm not sure. So it's up for anybody's guess, and I do get the sense but just by the sheer volume of gods and goddess demon things that are mentioned in the Conan universe, that it is a multiverse of metaphysics. If you're writing or playing within this world, I would not even hesitate to just drum up your own god as needed, because I feel like there's a plethora of them there. And that implies that there's probably a plethora of them that are there as well and have just not been mentioned yet. I do hope that this has been informative and inspiring. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as Not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.